Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The physical fitness bug is alive and well. You don't have to join a health club, however, to be active. We can take matters into our own hands, or should I say feet. More and more people of all ages are jogging, walking, and biking to get the exercise they need for good health. And this time of year is prime time for those outdoor activities, though they need not be limited to the warm weather months. We're talking about these activities on today's program, and with me in studio are Professor J. Aaron Hipp, Assistant Professor of Public Health at Washington University, who studies how public facilities affect behaviors and health outcomes. Todd Antoine is Director of Planning for Great Rivers Greenway. It promotes interconnected trails for biking, jogging, and hiking. Jennifer Allen is the Active Transportation Manager for TrailNet, which promotes activities such as biking and walking. Dr. Scott Carr is an orthopedic surgeon at St. Louis University Mercy, specializing in sports medicine. He'll join us by phone in just a little bit. And a little later, we'll hear from Amy Markhors, long-distance runner, author, and columnist. Folks, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Aren't you glad we're inside today and not biking in this weather? It makes quite a difference when it's raining, doesn't it? Thanks for being with us. Aaron, let me begin with you. How do our area facilities stack up for bikers and walkers and joggers?
I think overall we have great facilities in St. Louis, and there's been a lot of improvement in the 5 years that I've lived here. Forest Park's a great amenity. There's great trails there. There's biking infrastructures. There's bike lanes. There's bike sharrows where there's signage on the streets. You can always do better, and where these are and where the quality, I would say, is good versus where things are not and the quality is not as good, I think is a big challenge for the region right now.
What is lacking?
Consistency and connectivity. There's not the infrastructure to run in every park. There's not the infrastructure to bike throughout the city. The city's very divided north and south in many ways, including in bicycling infrastructure. As somebody who lives in South City, works at Washington University, it's not easy to take active transportation, walking, running, biking, to Metro to get to WashU on kind of that south to north axis. It's not there. So some of the connectivity is missing. The quality and consistency across the region is just not there yet.
How do you go about evaluating all of this?
There's a lot of ways to evaluate this. We try to be as objective as possible. One thing that we're currently doing now is trying to use all the traffic cameras that are set up throughout the region and honestly across the U.S. and the world. So there's red light cameras or traffic cameras at many intersections. And right now they're sending people tickets. But if we can repurpose some of these cameras to capture how people or when people or how many people are crossing the street, we think it's using this infrastructure that's there for a good purpose that urban planners, folks like TrailNet and GRG and evaluators can use this. We also do a fair amount of surveying.
Right. Well, the Missouri Supreme Court may take care of the camera situation.
Yeah, and we're trying to keep on top of that and understand where it's going to go.
Right. Jennifer, let me turn to you with regard to your organization and how it's set up and structured and react, if you would, to what Aaron has just said.
Sure. I think we agree with Aaron that there's been a lot of great strides in our region, but if you look across the country, over the last 5 years, there's actually been a wave of innovation. And what people are finding is that people want to be in more comfortable, sort of enjoyable bikeways that include not biking with traffic all of the time. And so we're really sort of trying to push for more of these protected bikeways and things like neighborhood greenways. So right now we have the Neighborhood Greenway St. Louis Project. It's focused just in the city of St. Louis. And one thing that Aaron pointed out is that the sort of north-south connectivity issue, whether it be transit or bikeways, is really important to us because we're trying to reach everyone, no matter what neighborhood you live in. And so that project is looking at a neighborhood street. You know, you walk out your front door, maybe in a single family neighborhood, and that neighborhood street is transformed to have the safety and comfort of a greenway similar to what GRG builds.
How is it transformed? I mean, how exactly is it structured?
So, for example, if there's speeding cars, there's going to be a look at designs to slow the cars down. Maybe you live on a street that is three blocks from a major street where cars are going 35, 40 miles an hour. So it's going to look at how do you get people across those intersections. So it's very much sort of urban acupuncture. You're looking for those little places that are mm-hmm. causing problems, and you're trying to relieve what's going on there.
Now, you mentioned innovation in other cities. What kind of innovation are you talking about?
So a protected bikeway might be something akin to something in Indianapolis we just took some regional leaders to visit. It's called the Cultural Trail. So when you walk outside, what you see are pavers. You see beautiful landscaping. You see curbs separating people from car traffic and a whole other space for people walking. So it's kind of like this Cadillac version of great places to walk and bike. So cities are doing something high-end like that, and Todd can maybe talk about some ideas here for doing something similar. Or it just may be a typical striped bike lane that you see, but you're going to add an area of more protection. You can do that with planters, paint, etc. So cities around the country are putting those in to attract business and people.
I think we could probably look to Europe to get a lot of tips on how to deal with this, couldn't we?
You absolutely can, but what's great is that we have a lot of Midwest examples now, Chicago, Indianapolis, Nashville, Memphis, and then we have places on the coast as well. So this is not something new. This is not something that hasn't been tested and studied.
And we also have wider streets than in most of the country.
Yes, we have space to work with.
We do. Todd, let me turn to you and get your perspective on what we've just been talking about and what your organization is up to.
Yeah, so no, I think that we're looking at the regional system and how we can make those connections from neighborhoods, from the Metrolink stations, from areas of places for people to go to school, go to work, go to recreate. So we're all about trying to make those connections, not just within the jurisdiction or within the neighborhood per se, but also sort of regionally and how we kind of make it part of the regional transportation system. So, you know, going to what Aaron and Jennifer talked about, I agree is that we in the St. Louis area here are really kind of at the beginning stages here, the last 5-10 years of really kind of developing the regional system here. But how we really make those finer grain connections into the neighborhoods is really going to be important and something that we're actively going to be working on with a lot of different partners over the next several years.
Well, I was about to ask with regard to what sort of political help you get and what do you need from politicians to make some of these things happen?
Well, I mean, I think what it comes down to in all these cases is funding. You know, I think looking at making these infrastructure improvements, money has to come from somewhere. Great Rivers Greenway obviously is supported by the taxpayers here within the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, and St. Charles County that voted twice now over the last 14 years to build this regional system. You know, but when you look at it, when you're looking at what you need to do in terms of making facilities that are safer either physically on road, such as what Jennifer talked about, or you're looking at making more of those challenging crossings, let's say how do we get a bike and ped facility across Lindbergh or across I-270, some of those major infrastructure investments we have in the region, how do we make those a safe crossing for folks is something that we need to really address.
I don't want to get off on a political tangent, but did the failure of Amendment 7 yesterday, would that have an impact on you folks with regard to what you're doing?
At least from Great Rivers Greenway standpoint, there were a few projects. We had two projects in the city in St. Louis County and St. Charles County that would have helped with that. Those are still active projects we're working on now anyway, so they're still working out. It might not be on the short horizon, but we still plan to implement them here over the coming years.
Jennifer, how about your organization?
Some of the projects that would have been funded by the tax obviously are not going to happen in the same manner, if at all. And so, yeah, that definitely impacts the region. But we're really hopeful that people are going to be working on a solution to get that funding, though it won't be happening through a sales tax.
Aaron, let me come back to you. Most of our conversation so far has seemed to focus on bikers. Are they some sort of a priority in the scheme of things?
No, I wouldn't say so. And as somebody who walks and runs more than biking, I'm certainly personally interested in walking and running. But biking is, you can go further on biking, biking to work, biking for errands. There's a wider range of places you can go. So say in 15 or 20 minutes, you could go a few miles, whereas walking, you may only be able to go half a mile. So it opens the area up more. But biking, the infrastructure can be more costly. You obviously have to own a bicycle. There's helmets. And because you're going greater speeds, there's an increased risk of injury, at least in terms of collision injuries.
I walk every day in Forest Park, and I would say that walkers and joggers outnumber bikers by about 30-1.
Well, and some of it's, and this is with all of these, are you biking, walking for leisure, or are you doing these for utilitarian purposes to get to work, to run an errand? And there's different benefits with infrastructures and challenges with infrastructures for both. Because you, if you want to walk in your neighborhood, you want something that's leafy and green and shady and interesting things to look at for leisure. But for transportation purposes of walking, you need access to other modes of transportation, such as metro. And so those can vary.
You know, Jennifer and Todd, the first thing that I think of today when we're talking about biking is what has been in the news recently. There was a biker who was killed in a tragic accident, and then there was this incident in Sunset Hills where a biker was swiped by somebody, the mayor apparently, and the rest of the story is yet to be told. But, you know, does this indicate that bikers are basically unsafe? I'll throw that to you. Well, Jennifer, you're going to take it.
I don't think so. I think the issue is that we always want to go for a silver bullet solution, and that just doesn't exist in the world of biking. It's the same. And so what really needs to happen is at the same time as infrastructure is improving, we need to be working on policies. We need to be getting more people out there. There's a lot of different factors that lead to a cultural shift where your first thing is protecting a human life. You know, that's not more important than the meeting you're late to, et cetera. So we do have to undergo a cultural shift, but it's a combination of things that are going to have to happen, from policy work to building infrastructure to making people feel comfortable, like in the classes that we have that teach people how to bike with traffic. So it's a lot of different things.
Well, what you're saying obviously is very important, but it occurs to me as an automobile driver that biking has to be extremely dangerous. I don't see bikers on the streets. You don't catch them in the rearview mirror sometimes or the side view mirrors. That is a very dangerous proposition, which is why you want to make changes, obviously. But it is dangerous, Todd.
Well, what you look at it, cities around the country in particular have been doing physically separated bikeways, which is similar to what we saw in Indianapolis and some other cities here in the Midwest, is that people prefer to be physically separated from the vehicular lanes. And so I think that's the next generation of what you'll start to see here in the St. Louis area, is more of those types of facilities that are designed to keep people physically separated, because there is a preference for folks that want to be able to use their bicycle to commute for errands, to go to school, to maybe take it to the Metrolink station and all that. So we have to really look at how we're accommodating all modes of transportation.
Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think St. Louis is in a bit of kind of an awkward teen stage with bikeability, because we're not at enough numbers of bikers right now to where the average automobile driver expects or sees bikers and is looking for bikers when they open the door or when they turn right or turn left. We don't have that numbers yet to where the average driver is always looking for those. And so right now there are some instances of accidents or people disagreeing. But it just seems to be an awkward stage that as a community we need to get over and have more bikers out there, and having some of these protected bike lanes will get folks who are currently afraid or feel this barrier, it'll get them out there, and that will increase the number of cyclists.
Well, you have the same problem with motorcycles, and basically the problem is that they're smaller. They're not large enough to be seen in some of these mirrors that we have for safety issues. Did you want to say something, Jennifer? One other issue before I take a break, and that's the question of etiquette. On both the part of drivers and bikers, what's your take, Jennifer, on etiquette and what maybe needs to be learned from both parties?
Well, I think foundational is that, you know, we're human beings. Sometimes we're in our car, sometimes we're walking, sometimes we're on our bike. So we're all the same, and there's nothing more important than protecting yourself and not harming others based on your behavior. So I think that should be central to what we're doing out on the streets. But secondly, you know, bikes have the same rights as a vehicle. You know, they're considered a vehicle when you're on a bike. And so they have a right to be there just as much as anyone else. So I think the etiquette is, you know, if you are biking, it's great if you would be educated on the laws that are out there. It's great if you would be educated on how we're supposed to behave so we are visible to people driving, so that we're predictable, our movements, what they can expect from us. So it's important to kind of know how to do those things, and TrailNet is definitely a resource on those sorts of classes. So,
Todd, anything to add to that?
No, I think that, you know, what Jennifer said is really correct, is that what we can do to sort of educate all the users of the roadways, pedestrians, bicyclists, bus drivers, automobile drivers, all of them, about the different roads, different rules on the road is really important.
When I was growing up, we all had bells on our bicycles. I don't see them anymore, and I sure don't hear them. Why?
That's interesting, because we give out bells all the time free at all of our community events. And it's funny, kids put them on their bicycles and people come up to us and say, oh, I need a new bell and all that. I think I've actually seen in bike stores, you can actually have the bike bells are actually now on a lot of bicycles. So I think they're making a comeback.
I have never, ever heard one in Forest Park. Mm. And I'm there every day.
Hmm.
So get those bells out to the bikers. I've got to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about outdoor activities during the course of the summer, specifically biking and walking and jogging. My guests in studio are Todd Antoine, Director of Planning for Great Rivers Greenway. Jennifer Allen is the Active Transportation Manager for TrailNet. And we have with us also Aaron Hipp of Washington University in studio. A little bit later, we'll come back and we'll be talking about some of the other health aspects of outdoor exercise. But we also want to get a shout out, if you will, to the runners. And we'll do that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on outdoor activities. I want to take a couple of phone calls before we go to the running segment, if you will, because folks want to respond to what has been said so far. So let's take those calls, starting with Richard calling from St. Louis. Richard?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
All right. My comment is just to mention that bicyclists have the same rights as automobiles and motorcycles and whatever, because they're a vehicle as well. And I totally agree. However, I have yet to see more than a couple of bicyclists follow the law. The law also says that they have to obey the same laws that motorcycles and cars do also, and they don't do it. They just fly right through stop signs. They fly right through red lights. They think they're above the law because they're on a bicycle, and they need to learn that in some way or another, and I don't know how you're going to do it because they don't have to have a license, but the police ought to be more on the alert and give these people tickets, stop them, or whatever they need to do, because these people don't care. They're going to get hit when they go through, and they're going to blame the motorists that they didn't stop for them. Well, they didn't stop because they ran a red light. That's my comment.
All right, Richard, thanks so much. Jennifer, we hear that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, bad behavior, it should not happen. And so I agree with the caller, you know, enforcement is part of the issue. But it goes in all directions. You know, drivers behave badly as well. And so I just hope that people will keep an open mind that, you know, not all bicyclists do that.
Aaron, any thoughts from you on that subject?
Not particularly. I was just recalling being ticketed as a jaywalker in California once. And so enforcement stopped me from jaywalking.
So there is enforcement out there from time to time.
There is.
Okay, we're going to get back to biking, but I do want to bring in this part of the program. We'll take a few moments to hear from Amy Markscores. She's a long-distance runner who writes a weekly column for Fleet Feet about running in St. Louis and is the author of two running books, The Lola Papers, Marathons, Misadventures, and How I Became a Serious Runner, and also Powered by Hope, the Terry Griggs story. She spoke with Armanda Huntingfort, who asked what makes a good runner.
What makes a runner is just anyone who gets out there and tries. It's not about pace. It's not about a certain distance. It is anyone who is willing to put in the effort. Running is about effort, and that's what makes a runner.
Why do you run?
I started running to stay in shape for other sports when I was early teens, 13 years old, and I never considered myself a runner. And then as the years went on, running was the one constant in my life, and I would always go back to running. And I think it was in my early 20s that I started distance running. A friend tricked me into it. You know, I would run 3 to 6 miles, never even considered a marathon. And she said, well, you know, I'm training for the Chicago Marathon, and I'd like to run 8 miles this Saturday. And Amy, if you can run 6, you can run 8. So will you run 8 with me? And I agreed, so she wouldn't have to run by herself. And then she did the same thing the next week. Well, if you can do 8, you can do 10. Will you run 10 with me? And basically tricked me the whole way until I had run the marathon distance with her.
With your log runs, you've had a chance to run through a lot of different parts of the city.
What are some of your favorite areas to run, and how easy is it to get around safely?
I love St. Louis. I think St. Louis is, well, and the numbers show it, an incredible runner's town. It's saturated with runners, and it's extremely runnable. My favorite place, I would have to say, is Forest Park. I love Forest Park. It is such a gem, such a treasure for this city. So running around Forest Park, and then, of course, with the longer miles, I love to scoot out into Clayton and run all around the city of Clayton, which, of course, is very runnable and picturesque. I also love South City, so running the hill, running through the Grove is so much fun. Running through Soulard, the brewery, we'll run down to the brewery. And then we have our arch run, where we'll run from Forest Park through the Central West End, through St. Louis University campus, down Market to the Arch. And our trail system, you know, Castlewood State Park, Chubb Trail, the Lewis and Clark Trail, Grant's Trail, the Katy Trail. There are so many routes in St. Louis. So it's an extremely runner-friendly city. It's safe, it's picturesque. There is always something to look at. So I'm thrilled and feel extremely fortunate to live in this city.
Okay, let's talk about competitions. A lot of people show up at races. Only a couple people place. What's the point for everyone else?
It's that mental battle against yourself. You are always racing yourself. You know, what you think is possible. You are racing the clock in a lot of ways. You know, what's the fastest time? What's the shortest amount of time that your body can cover a certain distance? Of course, there are age group awards. So depending on the race, you know, you don't have to be an elite to maybe get an age group award. Of course, in the Chicago Marathon, it's going to be very, very competitive. But with local races, there's definitely that fun element of picking a smaller race because you might get a little award for your age group.
Well, we've got our own marathons and half marathons. Can you tell me about those races?
Yeah, so St. Louis has so many great marathons and half marathons to race. I mean, in addition to the 5Ks, 10Ks, and ultra marathons, the two biggest that people are often talking about are the Go St. Louis Marathon in the spring and the Rock and Roll St. Louis Marathon in the fall. And I've run both a few times, and again, I love it because I love the city. I love touring the city on foot, and they get, you know, thousands upon thousands of people for these races.
And these require a lot of training.
Yeah, there are so many different ways to train for a half or a full marathon. They're both doable for anybody. The biggest thing is to do some research. There are 12-week training programs for a half marathon, which basically takes you from that 3 or 4 mile range all the way up to the 13.1 of a half marathon. And you can follow those online. I know Fleet Feet St. Louis has incredible training teams that they have professional coaches. So you can get plugged into a group because you will need some guidance. You know, people want to know, how do I drink water and electrolytes? How do I take nutrition while I'm running? Because you do need to fuel your body on the go. But it's all incremental. If you can run 4, it's just the way my friend tricked me into running. If I could run 4, I could run 5 or 6. And then you just keep building. And that's why time is key. It's building up very slowly, and you can prevent injuries and gain strength and confidence.
What about walking? How do walkers fit in?
Running and walking are very similar in the sense that it's somebody trying to cover distance, right, over a certain amount of time. And the walking community is very strong as well. And the biggest thing is being up and being active. And, you know, walkers can walk as fast as some runners run. And you'll see people walking and running side by side. So you've got to find what you like, because at the end of the day, it's about having fun and it's enjoying what you're doing. And it's that mental and physical release. And let me tell you, I can be outwalked any day by many of my friends. Walking is a really tough workout. So you got to find what you like to do. Any of the places that you can run, you can walk. And the same thing with the marathon and the half marathon. You have many, many walkers, and at the end of the day, they cover the same course and get the same medals. I love that running and walking, they do fuse each other as a community. And what's incredible is that we have so many elites in St. Louis, Olympians and Olympic trial marathoners and runners and 5Kers and 10Kers, and yet you'll see them on any given day running with new beginning runners, running with their neighbors, running with friends, because at the end of the day, whether you
had to crawl across the finish line or you were sprinting across the finish line, you still covered the same distance and the same course. And that is one thing that is so unique about running. No other sport can you be on the same playing field at the same time as the pros. You know, we're not at Lambeau Field with the Green Bay Packers throwing footballs around, talking to Aaron Rodgers, saying what a great day it is. We are, however, on the race course in St. Louis, the Rock and Roll St. Louis Marathon, or if we travel, the Chicago Marathon, with the very, very best in the world. And at the end of the day, we can go up to that person and say, hey, wasn't mile 22 a bear? You know, that was tough, because we can run the same course. And that's why there's this great equality in running. It encompasses everybody. It's so human, and it forges a sense of community really like no other sport.
And that was Amy Marks-Coors, long-distance runner, author, and columnist, speaking with our own Amanda Huntingfort. Now back to our guests in studio, Todd Antoine of Great Rivers Greenway, Jennifer Allen with TrailNet, and Professor Aaron Hipp of Washington University. Jennifer, let me turn to you. Do bicyclists and runners peacefully coexist?
I think for the most part, yes. We do, and I liked that piece in that she was drawing out the ways you get to experience our city and region, the places you get to visit, and that's part of that connectivity that we want to see happen, is that people are able to easily, seamlessly get to all of these different neighborhoods, and then in the meantime, they're having that workout. They're doing something good for themselves.
Todd, what has inspired all this activity? It seems to me that there's a great deal more of it today than there was just a few years ago, not only runners and walkers, but bikers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's quite a few things, too. I mean, one of them is obviously is just all the health reports and, you know, things that we're seeing now in the news about early on childhood diabetes and other just health factors and people wanting to get out. And I mean, you know, I think, too, even going and watching shows on TV like The Biggest Loser, where people are losing weight and they're exercising and all that. So I think there's a whole variety of factors. But also, too, just people want to have an active lifestyle. And I think there's folks who grew up running, biking, just being active, and that as they get into adults and if they're out of college and whatnot, they want to continue that, and so they seek out those trails and those parks and those bike facilities out there to be able to do that.
Yeah. And Aaron Hipp, health clubs can be expensive.
Health clubs can be expensive. There's membership fees. There's access to get to those, and for I mean, as she mentioned, you can just put on a pair of shoes and walk out your door in many places and be physically fit.
Have you seen, you've been here 5 years, you yes. indicated. Have you seen an increase in all of this activity?
I believe so. I think I'm also more aware of it just by the nature of the work, but I certainly think there's been an increase in activity. A lot of it is with the obesity epidemic and an increase in diabetes and other non-communicable diseases, and that one part of that equation is an active lifestyle. And
go ahead, Jennifer.
I think another part of it is connecting to business. You know, more and more, you know, at Cortex, you know, they are trying to get a metro stop right there. We've met with business leaders that say, you know, our employees would love to bike to work, but without something that's kind of protected, we just know that they're not going to do it. So that's something we've been working on, is having those conversations with the business community about how they can help, because it's good for their business as well.
I'm going to bring in another guest now to talk about did you want to say something, Aaron?
Just to reiterate that point, I mean, walkability, is it brings in businesses, it keeps businesses, it brings in young college-educated folks who have jobs and money who are going to spend there, and that may be some of our tax increase to help pay for some of the improvements.
All right. As I indicated, we'll bring in another guest now to talk about another fascinating aspect of what we've been talking about, and that is the potential for injury. Joining us by phone is Dr. Scott Carr, an orthopedic surgeon at St. Louis University Mercy, specializing in sports medicine. He joins us by phone. Doctor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, let me ask you, what sort of injuries are you seeing most from bikers and walkers and joggers?
Sure. So most injuries that involve bones and joints that we would see would be overuse type injuries, whether they are tendonitis injuries in the knee or the ankle or the hip. And then also, as we get a little older into middle age and more elderly patients, you can get an exacerbation of early arthritis-type symptoms linked to swelling and some pain on occasion.
Well, what can we do? Those of us who want to get out and participate in these kinds of activities, what can we do to reduce the prospect of injury?
Sure. So things that would be smart would be to, number one, start slow. So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend if you've someone who's not regularly exercising to go ahead and, you know, jog for half an hour or longer, or, you know, go from no miles to 3, 4, or 5 miles at once. So definitely being prudent and starting slow and, you know, over the course of 4, 5, 6 weeks, working up to at a comfortable level to what you can do comfortably. And then also what would be prudent is to vary your activities. So, you know, there's obviously exceptions, but it's not necessarily the best thing to always do the same activity. So it's good to, for example, you know, walk sometimes, jog other times, bicycle other times, light resistance activities is good. Just to put different stresses on muscles to avoid overworking the same muscle over and over and over again.
You know, age is certainly an issue. The kinds of activities we're talking about involve people of all ages. What advice would you have for people from the millennials, if you will, or even younger, teens perhaps, millennials through people who are older, people who are perhaps retired even?
Sure. So in regards to injuries, you know, as we get older, the concern, obviously, you want to, before you start exercise, see a doctor, and, you know, there could be cardiovascular issues you just want to clear up beforehand. But in general, just being smart, cross-training, doing different activities, doing things that are fun, so it's an enjoyable exercise. Making sure you do things, if you're going to, for our younger population, for example, if you're going to partake in more aggressive activities, like you hear about some of the CrossFit things a lot nowadays and some of the more aggressive athletic, you know, sports, be sure that you're doing them smart under the guidance of someone that knows what they're doing to help you do good form and minimize injury from just preventable mistakes.
You know, we're talking about outdoor activities, and the outdoors changes, as we all know, from very hot in the summer to very cold in the winter. What sort of advice can you have for people with regard to being cautious during the weather changes?
Yeah, that's a great point. So the clothing you wear is really important, things like sunscreen. If it's really hot out, you know, hats, good clothing so that it's breathable, so you don't overheat. Staying hydrated is really important. Even when you're younger, we can become dehydrated and overheat easily, even just in our teenage years. And so that's a really important thing, and that gets more important the older we get. Obviously, safety issues occur when there's rain and snow or more cold in the wintertime. And again, you know, when it's safe to be outside, you do want to make sure you're dressed properly so you don't shock your system due to the temperature.
What about temperature extremes? When is it too hot to be outside doing these kinds of things, and when is it too cold?
That's somewhat relative. I mean, clearly the hotter it is, the more important it is to either be in the shade or really hydrate more than you would otherwise. Things like sunscreen are really important. I mean, if it gets in the, you know, mid-upper 90s or above that, then you have to be, you know, more prudent. And then same thing with temperature. You know, if you're going to go jogging outside and it's, you know, 25 degrees outside, then it's important that you're dressed well so you don't, you know, lose heat through your skin and that's not covered to protect against the elements.
A question for you, and I can ask it of our guests here in the studio as well, but I'll ask you. Is walking a best exercise? I've always heard that. It's just as good for you, as beneficial as running.
So it depends on what your goals are. So walking is a great exercise. If your goals are to be outside and have fun and maybe be social, then that's great. If your goals involve either treating or preventing illness, for example, diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, then it does make a difference. So if that's the case, walking is a perfectly good exercise, but it's important if you're looking for health benefits to achieve what we would call like a brisk activity. And what that, you know, probably the best way to judge that would be by some of my colleagues call the talk test. So if you're walking outside and strolling in the neighborhood and you can have a perfectly normal conversation with your spouse or your friends or your kids, for example, then that's probably not brisk enough to generate the health benefits that someone would need. If you're walking outside and you can talk, but you have to talk in shorter sentences, catch your breath here and there, that's a marker that you're exercising enough at a brisk enough pace that you are going to be generating some health benefits. Whether it's high blood pressure, cholesterol, anxiety, depression, that kind of stuff.
All right. Before we let you go, I'll ask my guests in studio if you would have any questions for the doctor before he says goodbye.
We've asked them all, I guess, Doctor. I thank you so much for being with us and giving us the benefit of your expertise on this subject.
You're welcome. It's a great program. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Dr. Scott Carr, an orthopedic surgeon at St. Louis University Mercy. I have to take another break. Then we'll come back and finish our conversation with Todd Antoine, Jennifer Allen, and Aaron Hipp. We'll be back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We continue our conversation on outdoor activities. And Aaron Hipp, let me come to you following up on the doctor's conversation. You deal with health behavior as well, I believe. What advice do you have, generally along the lines of the kinds of things we were talking about with the doctor, in terms of dealing with the outdoors?
Well, the CDC recommends for adults to have 150 minutes total physical activity at this brisk pace that he was referring to for about 150 minutes per week, so 20 to 30 minutes per day. So if you can get out and walk 20 to 30 minutes per day or jog, that in general is going to help you maintain and maybe even improve your health outcomes. But it doesn't have to be in that larger chunk, 20 or 30 minutes. We were just during the break talking about having time, or when it's raining like this, when do you do it, what do you do? But if at work you have the opportunity for 10 minutes to walk around your work site or walk around the neighborhood downtown, and you can do that in a 10-minute chunk, and you fit in two or three of those a day, then you're going to meet that 150 minutes.
Jennifer, what happens if somebody is injured on the trail?
Good question. I'm recovering from a fractured arm, so and it was a little bit of a bike accident. So, I mean, I've had to find different things that I can do to remain active. So a lot of walking has been occurring, elliptical machines, things like that. So, yeah, you got to take care of yourself. You got to make sure that you heal because accidents do happen.
And, Todd, equipment is a big part of all of this.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think, you know, there's plenty of bike shops, running shops, lots of stores around the area that will, and lots of very knowledgeable people, too, that will help you in terms of make sure you have the right equipment, making sure you're training properly, you know, things like that. So there's lots of great resources here in the region.
I want to come back to some other things and things that are on the drawing board. I know you're anxious to talk about that. But let's take Joe's call. He's been waiting. He wants to get into the conversation. Joe, thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts. I see a growing trend of signage that is indicating that the bicycle should use the full lane of traffic with the car. And while I agree, as an avid biker myself and a motorist, that people in cars should be aware of bicycles, here's my concern. There are laws on the books about impeding the flow of traffic. And one of your guests alluded to the fact that bicycles must obey and observe all the laws as vehicles. Well, bicycles just can't go that fast. And I see this on some of these roads, and I think that does is instead of improving the relationship between bikers and motorists, I think it fosters more ill will. And that's my comment.
All right. Thank you so much. Here we go again. I mean, we've heard that once or twice already. Thoughts, Jennifer?
Yeah, I've been in that situation myself when I was biking. We're supposed to be as far to the right as possible. Sometimes the width of the road may make it so that to feel safe, you need to take the full lane. But yeah, if there's a line of traffic building up behind you, that means you need to get over and let them pass. And so, unfortunately, the situation he's describing is where it's sounding like that bicyclist didn't kind of let traffic pull up. Go past them. And so, yeah, it's part of that education so people know what is the correct etiquette.
I was just going to point out once again that education seems to be a key because we keep getting these kinds of calls. I have, for instance, an email here. Is there any attempt to teach courtesy in biking? I'm visually impaired and often frightened by a bicyclist speeding next to me. There's no warning of presence, no acknowledgement, just the frightening sound of speed.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the off-road trail system, you know, I think trail etiquette is something, you know, Don, you mentioned you're out there in Forest Park quite a bit. I'm sure you've seen instances where you have bicyclists at various speeds, you've got runners at various speeds and walkers, and I think trying to get common courtesy. I know Forest Park has been working on getting some signage out there to really sort of help in that trail etiquette. And I think just basic courtesy is what folks kind of sometimes forget sometimes when they're out on the trails. It's just that, you know, there's people out there and there's, you know, people with strollers, there's folks with dogs and all this. And realizing that we all want to be out there and enjoying all of the trails, but that we have to be kind of mindful of our other trail users that are out there enjoying the nice day.
Aaron, anything you want to add to this, and then I'll move on to something else.
No, obviously, education is the key. TrailNet has some great resources. GRG, there's a cycling savvy group in St. Louis that helps educate folks on some of the cycling rules. And maybe there's a part to be played by bicycle and running shops to help educate at the point of the purchase of the bicycle or the shoes itself. Because, I mean, that seems like an opportunity.
And we also think driver's ed, you know, that's another point. So we would love to be able to take that on in the future. But right at that point of when you're learning about that as a child or point of sale, sounds great.
Should bikers be licensed with more of them on the road? Do you think there's a place for their licenses? You have an interesting reaction, Aaron. What do you think?
Well, my gut reaction was no. I think, just the gut reaction was no. I think having an education of the rights and responsibilities, it's the same as for walking or running, and it's the same for, you know, small motored mopeds and stuff.
Very quickly, Todd, license?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with Aaron. I mean, I think that it's been tried and it hasn't worked anywhere.
Yeah, I don't have anything more to add.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things that are on the drawing board. And we've been hearing about the Complete Streets program, for instance. Mm-hmm. What is that? Where is it now? It's something that's been talked about for a while, but what is it, Jennifer?
So municipalities can create a policy that basically says it is our vision and plan to make sure all ages and abilities are kind of accommodated when we're redesigning a street or we're building a new street. Mm-hmm. So TrailNet has worked with several to get such policies passed. The city of St. Louis has had one since 2010.
Has it done anything with it?
You know, they're working on implementation. So there's been a lot of projects that have come forward that have indeed helped implement that policy. And I know that they're working to move things forward even more. And then the county just passed one in January 2014. We were able to work with Councilman Dolan and Stanger and get that policy passed. And it's one of the best in the country. So that's really exciting that, you know, it's bringing the Parks Department, the Health Department, the Department of Highways and Traffic together to kind of make the streets great for everyone.
And now potentially you have Councilman Stanger in a more powerful position to
potentially,
to help you.
Yeah.
Todd, let me turn to you for bike share. It's something we've been hearing about. I think I probably know what it is, but what is bike share and where does that stand in this community?
Yeah, so we are right now just in the midst of a feasibility study on bike share. And what bike share is if folks have been maybe to Chicago, Indianapolis recently, New York, many cities around the country have it, where you can do short-term rental, typically for about a 30-minute trip. And it's usually used for commuting purposes. So someone could use it, let's say coming from the Metrolink, they want to get to their place of business. And so they take that half-mile bike ride using the bike share bike to get to their place of business. And you check it in. Then you check it, you kind of check it back into the stations. And so it's looking at how we could develop a network here in the St. Louis region of bike share network and looking at where we would have these stations all throughout the city and county.
Where do the bikes come from?
So there's different manufacturers, but basically these are publicly owned bikes that would be stationed out throughout the city in different neighborhoods, and that you would basically go to there's lots of cities have different apps and different ways of finding out where the stations are and what bikes are available and things like that. So
Jennifer, you like that idea?
I think it's a good trend. You know, we've seen it work really well in a lot of cities, and it's great that they're doing this study to make sure it can work well in St. Louis. But I think the key is really sort of your density of population, both people living there and working throughout the day, and those key areas where the stations will be successful. And so I think it can work in certain areas, and what's great is it's something that can grow over time. So you maybe start small, get your successes, and then grow it over time.
Aaron, I would wonder if the bike riding population is sufficient to support something like that.
Yeah, that's probably a fair question. I know when I personally used bike share in D.C. and Minneapolis, it's been when I've traveled for conferences for business, and so I have used it to get, say, between the hotel and the conference location. And so I think just defining what success is – And again, it's going to come back to education. If folks are going to use connectivity, to use bike share to get to Metro, they're going to need to know about the laws of the road. They're going to have a helmet, or they should have a helmet to ride. And so it comes back to education.
And Todd, more and more employers will probably have to have showers in their facilities to accommodate that part of this exercise.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing more and more employees are hearing from folks, especially when they're recruiting folks from around the country and they've been in cities or lived in cities that have these bike shares, that have folks who commute by bike more and more. They wanted to have those facilities. And I think it helps to sort of make the quality of life here in St. Louis a lot better.
You know, I wonder, I don't want to beat this dead horse, but, you know, going back to the notion of a lot of people complaining about bikers and the courtesy and all the rest of it, if we put more of them on the road, you know, we're going to have potentially more complaints.
The bike shares are large, heavy bikes with lights built in. I mean, at least they're designed well to be seen.
It reminds me a little bit of Uber and Lyft, which is getting so much publicity these days, kind of in that category. I have another call. Let's take that. Michael in St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My name's Michael. I'm a local physician, and I'm also an avid cyclist. And, you know, I really just kind of felt the need to call in when I was listening today on my lunch because I just was surprised overall at the kind of ill will towards bicyclists. And I just kind of felt that, you know, with the obesity epidemic and, you know, pollution, all these other factors, I think, you know, maybe we should encourage cycling more and try to, I guess, make people more aware of cyclists on the road rather than, you know, just kind of point at, like, the guy who runs the red light or the guy who doesn't get the stop sign. I think those are kind of small examples of cyclists having bad behavior compared to maybe the majority of us.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call. It's good to hear a voice from the other side because there has been a kind of a lopsided account today from people who have been critical. Only a couple of minutes left. Jennifer, let me come back to you and ask each of you to kind of wrap this up. What do you want folks to be taking away from this conversation today, particularly with regard to your organization?
Well, one, it would be great if people would check out our Neighborhood Greenway St. Louis project. Again, it's in the city of St. Louis, and you can go to trailnet.org and find out more about that. We're working with RISE to have an online mapping function where you can put in the routes that you would like to see happen. And I just want to stress that part of what's great about Neighborhood Greenways is it's also doing something good for the environment. We're partnering with the city of St. Louis. They have all sorts of things that they're trying to do to increase sustainability. And Neighborhood Greenways help with that by managing stormwater and doing some other things. So please check that out. And I think people should take away that, you know, there's a lot of different things that we need to be working on at once to kind of make things better.
We'll have a link to your websites, by the way, on our website, stlpublicradio.org, for more information. Todd, how about you? Your takeaway comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of great resources and a lot of great things that are really happening all throughout the area. You know, there's lots of different organizations and entities that are working to make St. Louis a better place to live. And, you know, between the off-road trail system that Great Rivers Greenway is working on to the on-street system that we're working with the city of St. Louis on, you're just going to see more and more facilities and more opportunities for folks to be able to get out and to get out for recreation, be able to get out and commute.
And, Aaron, you're working with these organizations, or at least Greenways, are you not?
I am. I've worked with both of these individuals, and right, we'll continue working with them.
I also have a note here that you're working with some business people with regard to having facilities for bikers when they maybe get a little sweaty on the way in.
We are. We surveyed in Missouri about 2,000 employees between the age of 21 and 65 and what supports they have at work for physical activity and healthy eating. And so it's things like, do you have a shower at work? Do you have a place to lock your bike? Do you have a locker to store your clothes? And then some of the social norms there. Is it acceptable that you walk in and spend it?
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for being with us today. Our time is up. Todd Antoine, Jennifer Allen, and Aaron Hip, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a most interesting discussion. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk about a National Harmonica Convention in St. Louis. And then we'll take a look at how people are combining yoga with other activities, including beer and stand-up paddle boards. He'll also talk with a woman who has photographed all 251 of the STL 250 cake sculptures that have been placed around the region to celebrate St. Louis's 250th anniversary. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis Aldermanic President Louis Reed. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org.
St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Erica Smith, Aaron Dorr, Kyle Jacoby, Amanda Huntingfort, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Today we say goodbye and thanks to our very capable intern, Kyle Jacoby, and we wish him well as he returns to the University of Missouri to complete his journalism degree. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.